We get things underway, though, in the second hour of the show by welcoming back to the program, well, a true Renaissance man indeed, former NFL scout, executive general manager, a man who revolutionized sports broadcasting in Boston, the author of the tremendous book, Present at the Creation, the wonderful Upton Bell joins us. Upton, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. And by the way, Buckley is not only a terrific writer and a great guy, but one of the best. When you talk to him, tell him I said hello. I'm glad he's with The Athletic and away from The Herald, which I don't know what that paper is anymore, but he's a terrific guy.
He sure is. One of the best out there. And a wonderful moving piece that he's written about this Maine State Police detective. Well, what's going on? What's capturing your attention these days, Upton?
Many things besides sports. Here's a little tip for your audience, since you guys are always on top of everything. One of the people I followed for a long time is Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And he was just on a while ago today talking about our living standard, our lifespan is going down in this country,
right?
Not going up. And a lot of other countries where it's going up, he has studied, and he will be on starting at 9 o'clock on Saturday night. Well worth watching. One of the things that he pointed out today that I found fascinating, he went to study the indigenous tribes in the Amazon and why they seem to live so long, why there is absolutely no heart disease, which he points out we spend millions on each day. And some of the reasons that he found out was, number one, their diet is 70 or 80% of, you know, from the ground.
Mm.
There's hardly any meat whatsoever. But also one of the other things that I've adopted, and your audience might think about this if they're sitting down while listening to you today, is that 2 years ago a doctor told me that because I work out at least 2 hours every day. And he said, well, you work out for 2 hours, what do you do the rest of the day? I said, well, I have a lot of work and stuff to do, but I have to do a lot of sitting. He said, all the sitting that you or anybody else does completely wipes out all of the exercise that you've gotten for 2 hours. And that's one of the things that Gupta talks about in the Amazon, that the average steps per day there is between 17 and 20,000 steps. But one of the things that they don't do is they don't sit around. They hardly ever sit. They're constantly moving. And one of the things that I learned a couple of years ago was I never sit, even watching games. I've got 3 TV sets. I watch the games. I watch news. I watch everything. I never sit down during my waking hours for more than 20 minutes. And I get up. I walk around. And this is in addition to working out. But that is something that people have to learn to adopt to. In businesses everywhere, to stand as much as they can, you can sit. But don't do it for any more than 20 or 30 minutes because you've destroyed everything you've done during the day.
Oh, that's great.
That's my Dr. Upton Bell for today.
That is great advice indeed. Well, I try to do that. Of course, as a teacher, I tend to be on my feet a lot. But if not, I get up, I move around, I walk the halls between classes and try to keep moving as much as I can. The other thing some of those cultures have that live longer lives, or maybe it's what they don't have, they may not have 24-hour-a-day news channels. That can take years off your life, too.
Well, you're right, Rich, because he pointed that out, that they have no trouble sleeping because they don't have any of the instruments that we have now. The other thing is that they build into their society a great ability for socializing, that they're many of the groups are very, very close. And one of the things that I think has been destructive to this country, especially the last 2 years, is the name-calling, the bitterness. I know people that have either gotten divorced over what's gone on with the whole Trump situation and the meanness in this country. And I've lived a long time, and you have too. I've never seen so many meanness as I've seen the last 2 or 3 years. That, they said, in this indigenous society, and of course, They live, they certainly kill things, and they have no protection as far as medicine is concerned, yet they seem to have a life that is completely different from ours and really adds to the overall length of their lives and the goodness of their lives. So all of that adds in.
I think part of that, too, is the lack of social media, because much of that meanness becomes easier when you're not looking someone in the eye. I think it's hard to be a jerk when you're talking to someone face-to-face. It's a lot easier when you're hiding behind a screen.
Well, you're absolutely right. But again, their ability to settle squabbles among the tribes, and that whole idea, you know, there used to be a time in this country where we could settle. But when we see that we have elected people that go to Washington, and I say every day, there's a disconnect. They're not listening to what people say back home and what they want done. It's like their own separate tribe there, and nothing is getting done except blocking. One side blocks the other side, then they block them back, and as a result, we, the people who elect them, are getting not a damn thing.
Well, and I suspect, Upton, that you grew up looking at the world a similar way that I did, and a lot of my friends, that you might have leaned one way, but you grew up seeing lots of people out there working in the government that you could have respect for on both sides of the aisle, because in those days they understood that compromise was an essential part of that job.
Well, you're absolutely correct. I grew up in a family, most people think of me and the Bell family as being mostly sports, but actually my mother was an actress, and my grandfather was the governor, and also one of his other sons was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. He was the Attorney General. I was around politics. I was around music, art, all of these things, which were discussed every night at the dinner table with anywhere from 3 to 20 people. But there was even though there were Republicans and Democrats, there was a whole idea that, you know, we have to, you know, go along, get along, and let's figure out how to work this out. I've never seen anything like what I've seen today. And everybody suspected. Everybody's motives are suspected. And nobody's talking to each other. And I think that's as big a problem. And it's not going to be solved until people start talking to each other. But when you have your leader of the country cursing people out, using language, getting into racist situations, and constantly stirring the pot, that's the alleged leader of the country. The people take their lead from him. And I think it's a very, whatever your politics are out there, it's very, very dangerous when you see. It's like you teach, Rich. If the kids that you teach see you getting up there and using terrible language and all sorts of racial remarks and anger and bitterness, what do you think your students are going to do? They're going to say, it's okay. Rich did it. We can do it.
We're talking with Upton Bell here on Downtown. Upton, you mentioned your family and your upbringing. You've shared with me in the last couple of days some remarkable photos and old newspaper articles on your family, and you're putting together a remarkable archive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can, and certainly when it's done, I would be happy to come on and talk about it more. But generally what I've done is I've taken, as you have been on the radio for a long time, I've taken off radio and television over 40-some years, every major author that I've interviewed from around the world, and now it's almost 500 of them. Every one of those books are inscribed with details, everything from Peter Bogdanovich, the famous movie director, who spent the day with Orson Welles. He writes out a whole thing for me on Orson Welles. That will be then added on to letters, memorabilia, all sorts of things that go all the way back to the 1890s. And so part of that is the fabric of my family on all different sides. There were people running through that actually, one of them served in the sub-cabinet of Abraham Lincoln. Another one served as the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, another one governor, another one the Supreme Court justice. In fact, my uncle on my father's side actually was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, and Derek Bach, the president of Harvard, his father served with him on it.
Oh, wow.
So the exposure, all the history in this country, including Harry Truman, Franklin Roosevelt, it will be a cornucopia of everything from sports to music to politics. My mother, her being discovered and ending up in the Ziegfeld Follies, her experiences around the world. Her father spoke seven languages, never finished up high school, became a New York City cop because he could go into the different sections of New York and speak the language, whether it was the mafia, Germans, you name it, and his whole life. And then his father wrote the ultimate book in Ireland and was thrown out, called Uncle Pat's Cabin, which was a takeoff on Uncle Tom's Cabin and the treatment of African-Americans in the South. That whole situation and the adventures and all of their lives, this will be in a history that will have easily over 1,000 items. And anybody in your audience, when this is all finished, will be able to go online and see this whole history, click on their favorite authors, hear interviews going all the way back to Ken Burns, when I did him back in the late 80s. You can hear all of the history and see all of the things on there, including some of my mother's movies, you name it. It's all part of it. It probably will end up being the biggest collection in America.
That sounds remarkable. I look forward to hearing more about that. Well, your dad, Bert, when he was commissioner of the NFL, he certainly had a number of challenges. We've talked about some of those, but did he ever have a situation like this one with Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots? And how do you think the NFL will eventually handle that situation?
Well, first and foremost, no, and you interviewed and did a great job, because I heard it, John Eisenberg on the league, and talking about the five men who made pro football, including my father. The problem that has happened today, and I'm not going to be overly critical of Kraft because he's dug his own grave as far as I'm concerned, is that they were about the players, they were about the game, they were about surviving. The owners today are about power, they're about money, they're about celebrity, they're about all of these things, and I think that's one of the things that kind of got Kraft into trouble. You know, the whole idea, no matter what they do down in Florida, the whole idea that, you know what, I'm bigger than life, I can go to a place twice and do my business and then get on a plane and fly out for the playoffs and nothing's going to be made of it. What the hell do you think is going to be made of it? You put yourself in that type of position, and that's what happened. I think it's going to be difficult because I think Goodell, you know, politically, he's, you know, wants to keep his relationship with Kraft. On the other hand, what about the public stance? If players in the NFL are going to be suspended, and players some for a year, for doing things that, whether it was beating up women or whatever they were doing, it's my opinion that no matter what happens down there, so what? So you get four lawyers and you block everything because you have the money to do it. But the bottom line is you went. That ain't ever going away. And I'm not going to call in a judge on what he did or didn't. But you know what? If you're going to do something like that and it ends up public, then you have to pay the price. So whatever happens down there, I think the Goodell has to at least give him 6 to 8 games. Probably in the old NFL, it's been a year. So what message are you saying other than the people locally or in New England say, you know, he's my bad guy, so therefore it's okay. But if he was somebody else's bad guy or did something wrong in some other league city, you'd be saying, look at that terrible person. But the bottom line is, what's right here? What? Put the lawyers aside. Put all of the things that are going on now, which I think are worse than what happened. That the whole idea that people around the country are saying themselves, like the Patriots or not, see, it's the same old story. This goes for African Americans who spend so much time in jail for petty things that they've done. Is they say, if you've got money, you're going to beat the rap. If you don't have money, you're not going to beat the rap. So I think that it's a terrible black eye for the league. I think it's just, with all the other things that have gone on, with the beatings in the elevators, with things happening with different players, that now the owners should be held to a higher standard than the players. And where that ends up, I think whatever happens, I think there has to be a suspension. And I don't say that vindictively. I have like Kraft, but that isn't what's going on here. It's what is right in life, what is fair in life. And to me, if you can afford to get off and you have all these lawyers, and by the way, Rich, I think it's making it worse. I think I
agree with you, absolutely.
If Bob Kraft had said, you know what, I made a mistake.
Yep.
I shouldn't have gone. Whatever his reasons are, I'm 77, I'm lonely, but I don't think that's an excuse. But if he said it from the very beginning, you know what, like everything else in life, this is a great country. How many people have been forgiven for things that they did because they came right out, got ahead of it, said, you're in it, I blew it, I shouldn't have done it, what was I thinking at my age, and all the other things. And would we be talking about it today? Absolutely not.
The lessons of Watergate, the cover-up is often worse than the crime.
Well, it is, but see, I talk to people who say to me, he owns the Patriots, he's got all sorts of power. He gets off, but I don't. That's the thing, that wherever you go, if you are a celebrity, if you're well known in this age of everybody knows your business, you've got to be more than careful. You have to be pure, as they say, than Caesar's wife, like it or not. And this is a perfect example of it. I don't know what your feedback is in Bangor. And in Maine, are people calling about it? I mean, here, it's on the news every single day. Bill Maher, whether you like it or not, makes it a punchline at the end of his show every Friday night. You can't escape it. And the reason you can't escape it is that the lawyers keep going on and on and on. Now they want to block the video. I understand why they talk about and want the video blocked. I'm sure it's embarrassing, but this is where we are.
Upton Bell, always great to get your perspective on things. Upton, great to talk with you. As always, thank you for making time for us this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Rich, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Make sure you read Upton's book as well if you haven't already, Present at the Creation, a sensational read, and always a fascinating conversation with Upton Bell. Join